Welcome to Cannabis Business Minds Podcast with your host, Simone Samaluka-Radzins. Join me where I'll take you inside the ins and outs of this brand new and exciting business called cannabis. Connect with me on Calligia.com and follow us on social media as well. And here's today's show. Hello, Cannabis Business Minds. This is your podcast host, Simone Samaluka-Radzins, and today we get to talk to Toni Forge, an amazing legal attorney based in Los Angeles, and she's been spending the last 2 years helping cannabis operators build compliant businesses. So sit back, relax, and enjoy this episode of Cannabis Business Minds.
I got into this whole thing because no one could tell me how to get started, and I thought that was the craziest thing under the sun. So you mean to tell me no one can tell me you have to do A, B, and C? And so I modeled my practice and everything around, this is what you need to do to get started. 1, 2, 3.
Yep.
And if I said, I'm a lawyer and I can't even suck and figure this out, how are other people going to figure it out?
Totally. Well, I think this is the interesting part, because even myself, like, you come from a world in corporate America.
Yes,
and you excelled, right? And you excelled and you got, well, I want to know about that story, but you excelled in it and you learned a certain specific skill set. But mm-hmm. then you come into a new field, which is a mm-hmm. complete startup industry, mm-hmm. and all of a sudden you're a business owner.
Absolutely.
And an advisor.
Absolutely.
And it's
Absolutely.
Hard. And so I think, but honestly, that's kind of the best way to give people advice is doing it yourself.
Yeah. And you know what? My last gig before I left corporate America, never to return, I will be selling roast beef sandwiches at Arby's before I can ever go back. I will be selling at McRib before I ever go back to corporate America. But I was selling platforms. I was selling enterprise management systems for big corporate law firms, for big corporations, for their legal department. So it was like going out selling. So it was very yep. entrepreneurial. Yep. So I felt like the universe was getting me prepared for this gig. I always knew litigation patterns and procedures and what to do in this kind of case, what to do in that kind of case. And in my old world, people just automated those processes and sold them out. In these type of cases, this is what you need to do if you have this type of case. And so I was literally creating these programs from scratch and then selling them for this big corporation.
Wow.
Yeah. And so, it just kind of was, I think that was the segue for me to have my own gig now. Because mm-hmm. even though I got a paycheck, it still was extra bonuses if I sold more. So I had that entrepreneurial kind of spirit to get up and really go out there.
And the hustle.
And do the hustle, because this is all about the hustle now. Jesus.
Right?
I feel like I'm on the yard, toot, toot, beep, beep, you know, just
Are you, right? And are you just like always thinking about business?
Yes. Like, yes. But I mandatorily turn it off Friday night to Sunday night.
You can do that.
Yes. And the weed people are like this. The weed people are going to contact you, you know, on a Saturday at 11 o'clock or p.m. It's amazing to me. And it's trying to bring that professionalism, you know, from the old culture we're used to, yep. corporate America, into this new structure. But I tell people, no, I will get to you Monday. And I just started that last week after doing this for 2 years. So I'm not good at it, but I just had to start something because then it's 24/7 and I yep. have a significant other and I have a family and you never get away from it. And I was just like, yep. I can't live like this.
Well, no, I mean, I think that's where I'm like been battling. It's because I'm so passionate about all this stuff. But
right.
like my mind is like literally wired 100% of the time. Like cannabis, how can I hustle here? What problem is it solving?
Girl, you need to come down.
I know. I know.
You got to come on down and take a breather, okay? Because then how do you get re-energized? That's my whole thing. If
yeah.
you're up constantly,
yeah.
who can sustain that? You
well,
little damn
somehow,
superwoman.
I have been able to, but I don't think it's a long-term thing, right?
Okay,
like,
right.
I think it's probably like this excitement has fueled me and I'm like, well, what's going to happen in 2018? And then I'm like, well, it's not like anything's going to happen in 2018. It's like, what's going to really happen in 2025? And
right.
so to sustain that marathon,
right.
a client was like, we're just at mile one. And I was like, that's a good point.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because you bring down a shark, what? One bite at a time. So that's what you have to think about doing. You have to find some type of mechanism to turn it off. Because if you don't, you just go batty cuckoo.
How do you do it?
I literally have to stop myself. So how do we think about positive thoughts? Because I think innately we always think as human the worst is going to happen until you retrain your mind to think positive thoughts. And I think the same thing for me with turning this off is that what is really going to happen Saturday and Sunday that I can't do Monday? Really, what's going to happen? And I was really reading this book from Devon Franklin. He's an inspirational speaker, and he's also a Hollywood executive. And he acknowledges, because of his faith, he takes every Saturday off in light of his industry. And he said at the beginning, it was, oh my God, how am I going to do it? But he does it, and nothing in Hollywood has, you know, fallen through the cracks because he took the Saturday off. But he really talked about spiritual renewal and just renewal of oneself.
Yeah.
And so I think that is absolutely critical.
No, it definitely is. Because if you can, because I think that there's this aspect of when you have, you know, your mind, body, and soul, right? And if your mind is going so fast, sometimes if you just took that step back, that's why you see a lot of executives doing meditation.
Right.
Right? To take that step back so you can maybe actually process something quicker, even though you're taking a little bit of time.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Because then I think, how am I creative if I'm always having these checklists just spinning in my mind?
Yes.
You know, how do I think about a creative outlook when I'm like, okay, Tony, and I literally do a checklist every morning.
Oh, do you?
Oh, every single morning.
Is this the roadmap to success for you?
I don't know if it's a roadmap to success, but it's the roadmap to sanity, you know? So every morning I get up and I do a checklist of what I want to accomplish that day. Mm-hmm. And I'm a visual learner, so I can't do this crap on my phone and all this other stuff. I've got the old school planner. Yes, I see your notebook.
Yep.
So I've got the old school planner, and I plan out my week, and these are the big goals, and then I do the goals of the day. And it's a beautiful feeling when you can cross all of it off.
Yes.
And I do it every single day.
Oh, really?
And I have a notebook by my bed. And if I think of something, like in the my time when I'm thinking of crazy crap is like 4:30 a.m.
That's
my
witching
hour.
Yeah.
Wow. What is that about?
So what is that about?
I don't even know.
I woke up this morning at like 4:20, but like 4:45. And I was, my mind was like, okay, let's get started on the notebook.
Well, see, what I do is then I write my notes.
Yeah.
And the man is in the bed saying, take your ass back to bed. Nothing is going to happen at 4:30 in the morning. So it's kind of this compromise, right? Because for my spirit, I need to write it down so I don't forget.
Yep.
But for the man, I need to take my ass back to bed so I can get some rest and you know, cuddle time. So, yeah. But it is 4:30 is my witching hour. It really is.
Well,
that's so weird. It's between us.
Yeah. I mean, sometimes when I'm really kind of like, because I'm so, I always think about strategy. So like there was a few months back, it was like 2:30 and I was like, I got to get some sleep, you know? And so trying to figure that out.
Yeah. Now it's all about me with the nuances for the emergency regulations.
Okay. Yes. Okay. So everyone that's listening, Tony's a lawyer and she's doing consulting and she's been helping with, you know, who are you helping right now? What type of cannabis operators? What are you doing?
I am helping people who, two types of people, new in the industry, trying to get in, want to know big picture, what do I need to do? How do I get there? Who do I need to help me get there? And then people who've been in the industry, and these are the hardest nuts to crack. Literally and figuratively, because these are the people who've been in the unregulated industry and really convincing them this is now going to be a regulated industry. Because some people, Simone, 500 years later, just don't get it and they don't believe it. Even though we passed yesterday, LA City passed the ordinances, and everything. And so we're ready to roll there. Yeah. People still think if I pay my taxes, I'm going to be okay. And it's just, no, it's not that. So those two types of people, new people entering the marketplace and then converting those longstanding cannabis owner, business owners into the new area of compliance.
But don't you think the new guys are so much easier?
Because
you're putting them through your checklist almost, right?
But this is the thing I'm always amazed with the new people. I've done absolutely no due diligence. And I'm like, how do you just enter an industry and know absolutely nothing about the industry? Absolutely. So in my other life that you see me as Curvy T on my Facebook and stuff, I used to have a plus size blog. And so I was, and I still am a plus size advocate. And so when I entered in that, that was kind of my passion project a couple of years ago. I still do it. But it was, okay, I got to know who the plus size designers are. What are the issues surrounding plus size women? How do plus size women feel about love, marriage, all these types of things? I had some type of idea. These people come in this cannabis industry fresh. I just know I want a business. You know anything about the business? No, I'm going to own a dispensary. Have any idea where you're going to get your supply from? No. Know what a business plan is? No.
It's insane.
It's insane times three.
Do you think it's just like the green fever that people are like, these dollars, and they see this like, because I don't think the media does a good job on painting the realities.
Absolutely.
Of what we're in.
Absolutely. They don't. It's everybody has the green rush fever. And my first thing is just like, take a breath and just don't be so eager. Just take a breath.
I literally did take one. I was like, okay, fine. Yes.
You gotta literally take a breath, people, because people are so eager, and I get that. But unless you do the right things, you know, you're going to be successful for 1 year, and you're not going to be successful for 5 to 10 years. And so I want people to live out their dreams and to be successful for the long run. And I mean, okay, In-N-Out sells what? That's the smallest menu in human history. It's like five things. But over the years, they perfected over, still doing those five things, grinding it out. Now it's, you know, the chain of all chains, number one burger, five little things. And so I tell my people, you know, you got to go in there as a process. It's not just, I want a license. It's going through the process of what do I need to do to make sure I have all the elements that my business is successful.
Totally. And it's interesting because it's so funny when you ask a person, depending on where their skill set lies, where do you start? And I mean that because I'll work with a lot of clients that are like, oh, I've designed my logo.
Oh, my God,
And I'm like, well, time out. But like, and just what you said, like, but who's your target market? Anybody that smokes cannabis or, you know, and even, but even on the B2B side, I mean, I struggle with this, right? Like this is a very complex supply chain.
Yes.
But really, I mean, truly, you know, accountant, lawyer, somebody that designs logos could
architect. You need an architect.
Yes. But we could serve everybody along the supply chain.
Right.
But even there, you have to start somewhere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You're absolutely correct on that one.
But what were you going to say about the logo? You see it
too? Oh, my God. And then this is what I'm done with. This is what I gave up December 1st, 2017. I wish it was Lent time, then it would be more meaningful. I gave up the arguing with the client.
Okay.
Because I get the clients that call me and say, all I need for you to do is help me with a marketing plan. Do you have a license? I don't need a license. All I need to do is have a marketing plan. Do you know this is a year starting January 1st? We're going to have to be compliant and you need a license on the local and on the state level. All I need is, I know all that. All I need is a license, but I already have a license. Well, I don't think you have a license since they haven't given out a license. So, yes, I do. I have it. But, you know, all it is the collective documents. Yep. And they think that's a license. Yep. And so I got to a point that I just said, I can't argue. I can't convince someone to listen to me. I can only say, you know what? And this is what I told them. Let me give you this information and you can decide whether you want to process it or not. In the state of California, you need a license, a cannabis license. And before you can get a state license, you need a local license. You know, and I gave him my 5-second blurb.
Yeah.
And then he said, okay, I need somebody to help me with marketing. I said, well, I hope you're successful and have a good day.
Yeah.
You can't convince everyone. You really can't.
Totally.
And that's too much energy. I'm going to need those breaths on my deathbed, and I'm not giving it to these cannabis people.
That's totally true. Because also, for you working with cannabis clients, besides the fact that some of them are not understanding kind of the law, how do you find working with them in the sense of, you know, I guess maybe some of the old school people and just I just want to uncover some of the myths of this, like, because I think the media, even now with the Netflix show, I haven't seen this one where it's like disjointed.
Oh, yeah. I haven't seen it, and it's in my inbox. I have to watch that once I get some free time to binge watch.
Yes.
But this is what I find, and it's the craziest thing. I think they're very arrogant.
I agree.
They are extremely arrogant. I know everything. You can't tell me anything. And I am just like, wow, you know, where is this kind of coming from? What I was just dumbfounded is a lot of it is either the personality of old corporate America. Like when you go to these with these, what am I saying? With the big NCIA conferences and stuff. And I go through and I said, God, I feel like I'm practicing law back in the early 90s. I thought it was going to be very diverse.
Yeah.
It's the old white man syndrome. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was going to be more women than I actually see on the floor. And that part kind of amazed me.
Yep.
So it's two things. What I see in the industry, a lot of arrogant people that need to be open to hear some suggestions and different ideas because they're not really looking at everything that's going on in the industry. They may look at it from a grow perspective, from a cultivation perspective, from an advertising, but they're not seeing how it all works together with the
ecosystem.
Compliance. I love that. It is an ecosystem.
Yeah.
I'm going to use that for my clients because that's exactly what it is.
Well, it's crazy. And I think, because I'm like, oh, God, I hope nobody's offended that we said arrogant. But it's like you find that everywhere, right?
Yes.
You find that in finance. You find that in tech. And it's like there's arrogant clients. There's amazing compliant clients.
Right.
There's amazing people that don't know anything and are willing to be handheld, right?
Right.
And so there's a lot. But I think that, I find that. And again, we're in California, so we emphasize a lot in California.
Absolutely.
But I find that I'm just shocked what's going to happen in early 2018.
Oof.
Because we have a lot of uncertainty at the federal level still. Today, December, whatever, what are we? 7th?
We're 7th.
Oh,
we're
tomorrow, 7th. December 8th. So it's going to be recorded and it will be released. So it'll be in the show notes. But the Rohrabacher
Far, no more.
Or Blumenauer, is that going to get renewed?
Mm-hmm.
And what happens? Because now the budget might be not renewed at all right now. Not the budget, but what is it? Because there's two things that might happen. They either renew this memo.
Yes.
Or they're like, they might go on, the government might go on a shutdown again.
Yeah, but we keep seeing this morning it ain't going to be on the shutdown. But who knows? I mean,
every
day is a different thing. So you're right. So that's why I'm looking to see what is going to happen on the federal level tomorrow.
Right?
And we've got bigger fish to fry. So you see everything else going on the federal level.
Yes.
I'm just hoping, we're not going to be the target with anything with cannabis or everything just remains the same because we've got, senators and Israel and the deficit and we've got too much stuff going on.
And California is like the sixth largest economy in the world.
Absolutely.
And LA just passed. So we have such an opportunity to really change a lot. What do you think about the taxes? Because I've been seeing a lot of this in comments and I did a little Excel spreadsheet this morning.
Did you? Look at you, supernova.
I know. Well, I was going to say super nerd. I thought you were going to say super nerd. I was like, yes.
The supernova. The sun. I just think they're incredible. I think they're...
Incredible's a good word in my vocabulary.
Yeah, I just... Wow. But you know what? I don't like to... What am I trying to say? Yeah, there are a lot of taxes.
Yeah.
A shitload of taxes. But I don't want that to stop people. You know what I mean? Because there's always going to be something.
Yep.
And I think I was just having this conversation with my best friend driving on the way here.
Oh.
Successful people are the people who just grind through it. You get knocked down. You get shitted upon.
Yep.
You are like, God, I just want to be in bed with bonbons. I was, when I called you last month, when I had my lovely business partner decide to do her dream. I was like, the first 2 days, I literally had tequila and donuts and was in the bed saying, oh my God, how am I going to do this?
Yeah.
But you get up, you dust yourself off, and you're just like, shit, I am going for it.
Yeah.
And that's what I want people to understand. The taxes suck.
Yeah.
They suck. Big time,
yep.
But we can't let that stop us.
No, 100%. And the opportunity that is here right now, it's, we were talking, I don't know if it was before we started recording, it's like the marathon.
Yes.
It's, we're on like literally the first mile.
Yeah.
And to have that goal and to be able to see through that will allow you to kind of persevere.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What are people saying in the comments? I'm just curious.
Oh, there's a lot of uncertainty, right?
Yeah.
And so what I've been kind of frustrated about just with a lot of the California operators is they're not ready. So I've been trying to I've been giving them free worksheets, like, oh, if you need to fill out an ownership thing, I'll send it to you. Like, this is how you can do it. Because it's kind of intense, like the whole application process and all of that.
And well, you and Caligia has these great little bulletin emails that have been really helpful.
I mean,
and I'm telling my clients to join you guys.
Because
they're really helpful. And I think you get a lot of benefit out of it. I tell my clients that all the time.
Awesome. Well, I mean, I was honestly inspired when you gave your free checklist because I was like, you know what? The whole point is, you know, if you're a service-based provider, if you're, you know, supporting cannabis operators right now, you do not need to charge them money.
Because
your success lies upon their success.
And if they have to get it. And we've all got to work together in the ecosystem.
Exactly.
That's my big thing now.
Yes. And so can you elaborate on that?
I just think, you know, if we... This is where I don't want the industry to go, but I see it. The big dogs, those corporate people have the money, the financing, everything in order to take over the industry.
Exactly.
But we've got to work collectively as operators, cultivators, everybody to what do we need to do? Mm-hmm. Maybe two of us need to pool our money together. What are we going to do to make sure mom and pop and smaller operators survive? That's my main thing.
Yes.
And then as a part of that, because I'm a person of color, is definitely what are we going to do to make sure people of color get a seat at the table. So that's where kind of my passion lies.
What do you think, like, can you allow, like, I haven't talked about the social equity program at all in LA.
Oh,
so
good
could
God.
You give an overview?
Really?
Yeah. Just
Is
like,
there an overview to give?
Well, I think that history's been made, right?
Yes.
I mean, so.
Right. So we have social equity program in Los Angeles is kind of, there's one also in Oakland, and Oakland was the pioneer, so we got to get all kind of props to Oakland. Mm-hmm. We're doing the social equity framework now, and I've been working with Robert Chala of
USC.
USC, who I love, and LA Cannabis Task Force, and we did a little memo and things like that. But what I want to make sure is that the definition of what a social equity applicant opens up, because I think it's very confining, and who in the hell is going to meet that criteria?
So, oh, really?
Yeah, it's very confining, and I don't want to say specifically what it is because it's a framework and I don't want people, well, I heard this and yada,
100%.
Yada, yada. So I want to work with Robert, with Kat to how do we open up that? How do we make this more expansive?
Yeah.
I think that the fact this is number one on Herb Wesson says so much. I'm so encouraged about what happened yesterday in City Hall.
What happened in yesterday in
City Hall?
Well,
we got yay for the ordinances. Mm-hmm. Yay, cannabis is going forward in LA City. And yay, social equity is going to be a priority program. So that part makes me really happy. But now, as you know, it's getting into the weeds and the thick of things.
And
it's making sure you grind it out. I'm going to be, I went to, I think it was in September, Kat Packer had a meeting in Watts to talk about social equity. And it was hundreds of people there. I was amazed how many people were there. You know, I'm talking about 700. It was a lot of people there. And she said, we're going to have some workshops. And so I want to be part of that conversation, those workshops of what do we do to grind out the specifics? Because we need to.
Well, we really need to. And just for the listeners, just so you guys are aware, I mean, when you think about where we are in cannabis, there's still people in jail. I want to talk about those stats. Like, there's people in jail, predominantly people of color.
Absolutely.
African-American, Hispanic. At a disproportionate rate than Caucasians.
Absolutely.
And they're still in jail. And people of... you know, from Wall Street, from corporate America, from myself coming in, you know, there's other people that are obtaining licenses for doing something completely legal while there's somebody still in jail, sitting in a prison, not being able to, you know, support their family, have a livelihood because of this.
Right.
And so that's why this evolved, is the whole concept was to give social justice.
Absolutely. And to really help those neighborhoods that have been affected by the war on drugs, to really get some of these monies back into them from your taxation from cannabis. Thank you, people.
Yeah.
But to really kind of help those people in those areas get the seat at the table as well.
Yes.
So, and, but I really think when we're talking about social equity, because I work with the Green Huddle Group in Oakland, who is a social equity program, is we need incubation. We need points for general applicants if they work with a social equity applicant. We need some incentive programs to get general applicants and other people to work with these social equity people.
Yeah,
it's not going to work because capital and the property is just daunting for them.
Yeah.
So we have to do some type of system. And Oakland does have that, kind of this point system. If the, you have and you're working with and you're mentoring social equity applicants, they get some points. And I saw that mentioned.
I think that's going to be happening.
Absolutely. It's mentioned in the framework drafts, definitely, to have that. But I want to make it robust.
Well, 100%. Because I think then when you just dissect it a little bit farther of giving these social equity programs, what's happening is you're able to hopefully build a new community in an area where, you know, the medium income is way below.
Absolutely.
Where people don't have necessarily fathers to, you know, there's a lot of single moms where kids might be dropping out of high school.
Absolutely.
And so it would be, I mean, this is what's, I'm like, this is historic.
Right.
You know, like if we can do this well and truly build out new communities, then that later on brings everybody up and true equality.
Absolutely. But I think in our neighborhoods, in our neighborhoods of color, we have to educate about cannabis. So let me tell you this story.
Yes, tell me, tell
me. This is so funny. So I went with mother-in-law 2 weeks ago to her best friend has been a pastor for 50 years. So I'm sitting at the, or it was her 80th birthday. Yeah, they've been friends for 50 years. Let me get the story straight. So I'm sitting at the table with nothing but these black pastors. Okay. And first of all, that's ironic with why I'm at the table with nothing but black pastors. And they're saying about all of the dispensaries and weed shops on Florence and Manchester.
Okay.
And I don't know if you've ever been there down those streets, Simone.
Mm-mm.
It is, and everybody hearing my voice can attest to it because they've seen it. It is a weed shop literally on every corner almost on both of those main streets from La Cienega to the freeway, to the 110 freeway. It's insane.
Oh, wow.
And some of them are drive-through. Oh, honey.
Drive-through?
They, oh, yes, drive-through? It's on lock. I saw the one on the corner was on drive-through lock. I was cracking up. So even my sister who lives in Long Beach, if she goes to that area, said, Tony, have you noticed how many weed shops? So I had to go. And I said, okay, this is crazy. So the pastor was telling me about this is horrible, these weed. I know I'm so upset. I'm writing my city councilman. I don't want them to pass it. So I said, but you're okay for opiates that are killing our community and killing people of color. Mm-hmm. To, you know, that's okay. So it's okay for a doctor to give a prescription for all of these drugs. And I've been personally affected by the opiate epidemic in my family. I said, but that's okay. And we're not talking about how this helps veterans and how it helps people with all kinds of disorders and how it helps people with cancer and how it helps people with all kinds of nerve pain and rheumatoid arthritis. But, you know, and those are the diseases, diabetes, everything. Those are the diseases that affect our community. But you're not okay with that if it was done in a responsible way. And the regulation is trying to help it get to be a responsible way. Simone, I'm speaking at the church. The man called me and said,
what? I'm coming. I am coming to watch you.
The man said, oh my God, I want you to speak at my church. You've convinced me. Yes.
Oh, but if you could get that aspect into religion.
Absolutely.
Because that's, I was just, I was in the city of Bell a month ago presenting in front of city council why they needed to. Economic benefits.
Right.
And there was about 25 Latinos ahead of me.
And that's a heavy Latino community.
And they were like, well, cannabis is marijuana and it's the devil and it makes you crazy. And mind you, normally when I give my presentation, nobody speaks ahead. So I'm like, well, I can't just give an economic presentation to convince people. And, you know, people walked out. Like, people booed at me. And it was – I was like, my God. And I just was – I tried to tell them because I don't necessarily talk about the medical benefits so much. But I'm like, I use cannabis.
Right.
I run some businesses. Right. I'm a good citizen.
Right.
I'm not crazy.
Right.
And so we really have to remember that – even though we're 64% of the population in the United States that supports cannabis, there's a huge amount, and I think some of the communities that could really actually probably benefit from it.
Absolutely.
That don't believe it yet.
Absolutely.
So and it's, you're the in right now.
Absolutely, because it is with a community of colors. You know, in East LA, mm-hmm. these people are fighting back and like, we don't want these weed shops in our neighborhood.
Yeah.
You know, we don't, we already have gang problems.
Well, that's
we always
the thing.
Have, yep. You know, we don't want it adding to. And what we have to tell them is, you know, a lot of these programs with Prop 64 and hopefully with social equity mm-hmm. is not adding to, it's putting in.
Yes.
And just really emphasizing that. But I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. You don't want to see that crap on the corner because I live in Eagle Rock. I don't see that on every corner.
Yeah.
And so you already feel when, and I'm from Compton, so I'm not speaking out of school.
Yeah.
I know I already felt with, I'm so sick of seeing a liquor store. I'm so sick of seeing this, that, and the other.
Yeah.
Why are you adding to it by mm-hmm. having a, you know, a dispensary or something else? But what we have to tell people is with regulation, you're getting rid of the 1,000 dispensaries on Florence and Manchester and maybe two. And this is going to add to the community and the benefits of what this can do to really help people.
I mean, could you imagine, like, if you just kind of took that scenario? So, you know, it's a completely, you know, regulated business.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully taxes are less, right?
Yes.
And, you know, people that have problems with opioid addiction and people who needed relief from pain management or anxiety all of a sudden have the opportunity to go to a dispensary. And they feel comfort and they get, you know, the proper education because that's still a big
thing. Absolutely.
And they're like, yeah, wow. All of a sudden, because this is what happened with me, I stopped drinking alcohol.
Right.
I started sleeping better.
Well, that didn't happen with me, but okay.
Oh.
Okay. I like that. I like that you, Simone.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I'll have a glass of wine. Like, we'll get our tequila. But I mean, really, I really stopped drinking it. And then I started, like, losing weight. And I was like, well, hold on. Time out here. This amazing medicine helped me with anxiety.
Right.
Maybe I'll use it on Friday as well for recreational purposes. But it's really great. But then think about what that could do to an economy. So people that were addicted to opioids who really weren't able to do anything much with their life now can start becoming transitioned back into society, getting jobs.
Absolutely.
Building that community again.
Absolutely.
We've been asleep, Tony.
Yes.
We've been asleep.
Absolutely, because those Chardonnay wives, I mean, they're medicated and doing everything else.
Yes.
I mean, but you're absolutely, absolutely correct. For me, I don't smoke, but I use it for a sciatic pain. And I use the bombs and the CBD oil.
Well, that's a
and
huge
it's
thing.
Been amazing for me.
Yeah.
And you're right. When I went to Harborside and I got this particular brand, I really people sat with me. They told me about everything. And I felt this is the way a dispensary should be. First of all, it was like going to Macy's or.
Really?
Yes. For me, it's got to be beautiful.
Yes.
And it was so open an area and it was gorgeous. And I really loved the diversity of all kind of people, meaning in age.
Mm-hmm.
I saw people in their 70s, a lot of people in their 60s and 70s, and just a couple of the stoners.
Yep.
But it was a lot of women. And it really can do a lot if we just open up our minds. My sister, you know, I come from a very Catholic family. And my sister, who was totally against me even getting in this industry.
Really?
Oh, totally. I got family shamed for a while. You know, why are you doing this? I just don't understand it.
Yeah.
And she tells me time and time again, I'm a total convert.
Yeah.
I totally get it. I understand it.
Yep.
I see it now. I just had to open my mind up because I was just thinking
because it was
stoner
the ego,
road.
Right? It's like
this,
like you don't allow yourself to like sit back and actually hear what somebody has to say.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And if you would have told me 10 years ago I'd be doing this right now, I would have called you a liar.
Oh, me too.
Yeah. This was not even on the track. This wasn't on the track.
It was not called cannabis 10 years ago.
No.
It was weed.
It was weed. And that's why I go in between.
Yeah. Well, so this is before we kind of wrap up. Like,
sure.
What what got you into here? Like, what was it, that tipping factor for you? Like, I guess before what got you there, paint us the picture. Like, so you're from, you know, LA, from Compton.
Yeah, born and raised.
What's your story?
So my story is I was born and raised in Compton. Mm-hmm. I'm from a middle class family. Mm-hmm, so it wasn't that, you know, I went to private school until I went to law school, in fact.
Yeah.
I have a brother and sister. They're both doctors. Unfortunately, my brother passed away of a heart attack. Oh. But I'm a very close-knit family.
Yeah.
And my mother always preached being exposed. So I was always exposed to a lot of things at a very early age. Traveled a lot as when I was younger. Traveled a lot as an adult. Made the decision, kind of, you know, not really a family person, want kids, but I'm a great aunt.
Yeah.
And that was pretty much it. But I know I've had a great balanced life.
Yeah.
You know? And I was in corporate America because at the time, you know, when you're a minority, being a professional is when you think you hit the pinnacle.
Mm-hmm.
And I just said to myself, I don't know why people want to do this. You know, I've been working with Fortune 500 companies, and I used to be the head of litigation management for 3 major insurance companies, huge. And I said, what people don't tell you as a minority when you hit these milestones is how lonely it is. Because you have nothing culturally in common with these people. When you're looking at white males all day and they're going to the Ranger games, and that's why I love that Insecure show, because they show this black lawyer. And that's
it. I love Insecure.
You're going to the Ranger game and they're talking and they're on the golf course. And what could a black woman from Compton what do you have in common with these people? And they don't have anything common with you. So they're kind of put back with, how did you even get up here for the first thing?
Mm-hmm,
you're always proving yourself to show that you belong here. And it's like being on the wheel. And I don't even have that energy at 53. I'm like, fuck it.
You're 53?
Yes!
Oh my God.
But you know, brown gets down and black don't crack. Okay? So... I just don't have this energy anymore.
Yeah.
And once I felt like I'm accomplished, I don't need to prove anything to anyone. I could do what I want. So how I got into was Monique, one of my friends. So after I left this job, she took me to lunch one day and she said, I think we should get into cannabis. And I was like, you're on crack cocaine. No, I'm not going to do this. And so I kind of started thinking about it, said, okay. And we went to a Prop 64. This was before Prop 64 was passed.
Yeah.
Went to a couple of these meetings, and I heard the statistics about people of color.
Mm.
And I was like, this is the most depressing shit under the sun. And just like I made social change in corporate America by being the token black person, I got to make social change here by the token black person. And that's what really got me excited and just wanted to be a part of it. So I love it. I love working with people of color. I love working with women.
Yeah.
I love the entrepreneurial spirit of working with new business owners. And that's the thing that gets me excited. Every day is different.
Yes.
Every day is different.
Every day is different.
Yep.
And before we get to the speed round, I felt that when I was working in accounting, like at one of the big fours, I just was like, I don't love to talk about sports. But then you have to almost try to fit in culturally, right?
Yes,
if
you
want
to
succeed. I mean, I just played the game. I was like, okay, if I want to move up, clearly you got to build relationships, period.
Like, absolutely.
Business is relationships.
Absolutely.
And this is when you see the difference when – A lot of stuff happens like on the golf course. Or a lot of stuff happens in a podcast room before we start recording, right? Like you're friends with people, you respect them, you know, and so it's like, okay, all these people love football. I actually never like watched football when I was growing up.
Oh, I love sports.
Oh, so you would have done so well. I remember I like had to get like in my football, like I had to learn it. I had to start like really watching all that stuff. Just because that's, I guess, part of the game.
It is.
And what's cool about this space is you get just to meet people in the cannabis industry that are like-minded.
Absolutely. And I'm a big personality.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And when you're in the legal game, come on, you know it's all the sucking nerds that no one liked.
Hello, and I'm accountant.
And you know, it's the same in, you know, accounting.
CPA world, yeah.
Because my best friend's a CPA. So it's all the nerds. And so now they got some money and a nice car. They feel all empowered. Yep. And they're going to show you how empowered they are. Yep. But in the back of your mind, you're like, back in the day, you didn't get any because you were a sucking nerd. Okay.
Yes. Yes. Okay. And then one other thing before we get to the speed round.
Okay.
One thing when you just, because I'm always thinking about finances, not always, but, you know, trying to help people kind of just manage their money, reach financial freedom, all that stuff. And when you think about trying to, like, what is wealth? And, like, you can make a lot of money, but if you spend a lot of money, you're really not saving a lot.
You're right.
And so it's interesting because I remember going in that pipeline, or not that pipeline, that trajectory of, you know, big four rising quickly, getting bonuses and all this stuff.
Oh, I miss that, Simone.
Oh, I miss that, too.
I miss that.
But remember creating something amazing. But then you see that you receive a bonus and you spend it, right? And so it's interesting that hopefully we can teach people also in the cannabis space, like, you know, build an interesting financial freedom roadmap.
But on the bonuses that I made, I'm able to start my business now.
100%. So, well, because you saved them.
So I saved it. You're absolutely right. And my bonus that I made, I was able to buy my house. So I am not the person. I did that in my 20s and early 30s. I was Giuseppe'd all day long and Louboutin. And now I am Nordstrom Rack all day long. Okay?
Well, you know what, though? It's like what got me here today is working that hard there. So I could make money, save money, and do my dream.
Absolutely.
Because you can't honestly start something with zero.
You're right. I mean, I have a supportive partner, and that part's good.
Yeah.
But it is. You have got to save, and you've got to make sure you have something in order to go forward.
Yes. Are you ready for the speed round?
I am so ready for the speed round. Right. This is so hysterical.
If you could tell somebody just getting into the industry one piece of advice, what would it be?
Oh, you know it. Slow your ass down. Take a breath. Take a breath. Don't be that eager. That's the first thing. I see people just too eager in this industry. Sit down, take a breath, kind of think about what do I want to do, short-term goals and long-range goals.
Yeah.
I mean, what is your short-term plan, long-term plan? What are you going to do to develop financials? People forget you need that. So it is when you're so excited about marketing and packaging and this is going to be the best weed under the sun. Woohoo! How do you really think about those practical things that has to do with running a business and what this is all about? This now new economy is about business. It's not about cannabis.
Yeah.
Cannabis is just the business that we're in.
Exactly.
But business nonetheless.
Yep.
Okay.
What? Okay, so you know how to set goals. You're hustling.
Yes.
You were drinking tequila and something got you. Stop drinking tequila.
Absolutely.
And when you hit like a down period. So what is it? Why are you hustling? Like what is it that keeps you going every day when you have those hard times?
You know what? It's my parents. My parents are my role models and they're incredible people. So my mother was a housewife for 30 years and then had a master's and became a college professor.
What?
With three sucking kids. Now think at the time I thought, whatever. As an adult and looking back at this, I'm just like, you are a sucking rock star because with three kids, how did you even do that? And she was a single parent because my parents were together. When my mom got educated, my dad couldn't deal, got separated, and then they came back together.
They
came back together, which is crazy. And my dad was in the Negro League. And that's why I think I get that from his side of the family. He was in the Negro League. He was the first African-American with a lot of different things. He's in the golf world. He manages a golf course, Compton Golf Course. He designed golf courses in the 60s.
What?
It was just this incredible stuff that he did.
Yeah.
And when I look at my legacy, it's about first. And so it's continuing the legacy of first.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah, so that's why I do it. You know, my mother says that, you know, she would tell us this constantly. You're only here because you stood on the shoulders of everybody that came before you. And I really, truly believe that. And so I help people. I mentor young black attorneys. Yep. I help people pass the bar. It's all about service and being the first and helping other become the first.
Yep. Oh, so, my God. Yeah. I love it. Last but not least,
yes,
Where do you think you're going to be in a year?
Oh, my God. You know what's in my mind?
Tell me what's in the mind.
You know what is on my mind? Because I really believe in putting everything out to the universe. Mm-hmm. And God answers prayers, but not in our time. It's always mm-hmm. a hint. It's never when you need it to mm-hmm. be, but it does get answered. Simone, I see us talking on GMA about the regulated cannabis industry in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. And it had a rough, rocky start. But look at what we're doing. And we're paving way. And the social equity framework is done. And we've got some good things. That's where I'm going to be.
Yes.
I'm going to be telling you, GMA just called us.
I am ready. Okay. I am ready.
Okay. And we're walking around. I want to walk around with George Stephanopoulos. I don't want to be with Strahan. I want to be with George Stephanopoulos walking around and talking about cannabis. That's where I want to be.
Okay. Well, okay. We've got 365 days.
We do.
So let's start working hard
and
later.
Big dreams.
Yes. Big dreams that I honestly think are able to be fulfilled.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, thank you so much, Tony Forge.
Thank you,
ESQ.
Simone.
Thank you so much. And if our listeners want to find you, how can they?
You can go to www.fourleafconsulting.com or contact me at tony@4leafconsulting.com.
Perfect. And I'll put it in the show notes.
Okay, great.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you for listening to another episode of Cannabis Business Minds. I'm your podcast host, Simone Simaluka-Radzin, CEO of Calligia. And if you're an entrepreneur and you'd like to be considered to be on Cannabis Business Minds, shoot me an email at podcast@calligia with your story and the history behind your company. And thank you again for listening. And I would like to tell you guys all that if you are entrepreneurs or if you are business owners, I have a very, very exciting thing to tell you. I am starting my online incubator and I'm accepting attendees, and the class starts January of 2018. It's a 3-month training program geared to helping you build a streamlined and profitable business. You can find more on calligia.com. All right, have a great day and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you for listening to today's show. This is your host, Simone Simaluka-Radzin of Calligia.com. I hope that you find this episode entertaining and insightful. My goal is to educate all of you about this exciting business because knowledge is power. If you haven't already, head on over to Calligia.com to connect with me and to meet other business leaders in the professional cannabis community. Also, if you like this, please go into iTunes and leave the Cannabis Business Minds podcast a 5-star review. See you next episode.